From Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, August 20th, 2013. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
Several firms shared data about the use of location-based advertising on mobile devices in the past few weeks. Some of the conclusions were surprising, others curious. We'll dig into the findings and what they might mean for the future of location-based services after a word from our sponsor.
Directions Magazine and the International Map Industry Association invites you to the first .map conference this September 8th to the 10th in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Mapmakers from the print and digital worlds will gather to explore new ways to deliver content, new ways to derive revenue from both print and digital, and new ways to design maps for a new audience in web, mobile, and print. We hope you'll join us for this unique collision of ideas in map publishing. Find more details at mapconference.net.
Now, we've got four different reports to look at, so let's take them one at a time, and we'll start with one from Placecast. And Placecast is a provider of location-based marketing and loyalty programs for mobile operators, payment companies, and brands. And Placecast had Harris Interactive poll just over 2,000 U.S. adults, not all of whom have cell phones, in May of this year. And here's what they found. There is a 19-point increase in interest in receiving local mobile alerts, having given permission, between 2009 and 2013. And nearly 4 out of 5 of those who found location-based alerts at least somewhat useful said a mobile offer would be more relevant than other more traditional coupons. So let's start with the basics. Why is it that there was a 19-point increase in interest in getting these sort of mobile coupons or mobile shopping alerts?
Well, I think there's certainly a higher comfort level with our use of mobile technology. I don't think we view them as intrusive as we are before, but I also think a lot of it has to do with the device itself. We have become very comfortable with our mobile devices, and our expectations have changed such that we want immediacy with our information, and we're more apt, I think, to give our location out, but also expect in return information when we want it. I just think that there's a different level of expectation now with the information that we receive over our mobile device.
It's interesting that you said you use the term time as opposed to the term location in describing these alerts. And it's interesting that all of these data that we're going to share are actually about location. So there hasn't been quite seemingly as much data gathered on when you send the alert as opposed to where you send the alert. Now, what is this about? How people think that these local mobile offers would be more relevant than other more traditional coupons.
And this is the issue. While we're still very comfortable with our mobile devices, I'm not sure we know how to get the information when we want it. Let's take an example. What's the type of app that you would use beyond simple navigation to receive an ad? I would submit that the app that we look at after navigation would be something like weather. And the delivery of a mobile ad in a different app, I think it goes to the point you just made. If they got them, where would they get them from? And would it be relevant to where they are at that time? So where they may not be expecting a mobile ad in the weather app, they would be open to the idea of getting an ad there. So again, I'm not sure that people know exactly where to look now to get that information. But if they were open to the idea, I would say there are certain apps that we're more comfortable with in getting a mobile ad.
Well, and I think that's exactly what the folks at Harris and Placecast think. Let me quote Catherine Cagle, Chief of Insights at Primary Impact Research, who analyzed the data from the Harris Interactive reports. And she said, this 19% increase suggests that mobilized customers are increasingly aware of how easy it is to use mobile phones to save money and time and have come to value offers that incorporate their location. There's a whole lot of believing. Like, we believe that they're more valuable. We believe it's worth giving up our location to get them. But this particular study does not say that, in fact, people are acting on those ads.
I think it's an issue of we are really at the early stages of knowing what ads are coming to us, because I think our expectation is that any ad that pops up on a mobile app is not relevant to us. Whereas, because we may not even look at them very much, we may pass them by like we do on the web. But I think it has to do with a user experience. And what I received out of these reports is, if it's providing a service, in other words, if it's giving you good information, and it's displayed in a way that gets your attention, there is a different comfort level, and I think you'd be more apt to click on it. Also, there isn't a lot of room for ad space in a mobile app. You may see one ad. On the web, you're going to see several ads, and it's easier to ignore. But on a mobile device, you're probably just going to see one that's going to be targeted, and you hope that that's relevant to you, and you hope that that app is going to give you that service, being a personalized ad, that you expect from the app that you downloaded, right? You downloaded that app. You made a conscious effort to download. And the ad that may be associated with those apps, you also expect to be targeted to you.
All right, let's move on to our second report, and that's from XAD, which is a provider of mobile advertising platforms in the U.S. and a leader in delivering targeted mobile ads based on accurate user location and search context. And the company shared its second quarter 2013 mobile location insights report, and that's based on data from April 2013 to June 2013. And it reviewed 20 unique national brand advertiser campaigns. So this is basically its clients, XAD's clients. And here's what they found. A third of the company's geo-precise advertising campaigns included geo-conquesting. Now, that's a new term for me, and here's what...
Yeah, it's a new one, yeah.
Yeah, geoconquesting is a targeting technique used to reach and engage consumers when they are in or around a target competitor location, right? So if you're Walgreens, you're going to target people who are hanging out next to the CVS.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And just to compare that one-third number that included geoconquesting, 90% of the campaigns use some kind of geotargeting. And they didn't say what, but my guess is most of it's geofencing, right? So if you're near their location.
Yeah, I think the report actually did mention geofencing if you download it. But yeah, that's absolutely what they're using.
And then they gave a specific example of Outback Steakhouse. And the click-through rate for Outback for its geoconquesting ads exceeded the industry benchmark by 80%, which sounds awesome. Okay, so you get an 80% higher return when you do geotargeting than either, I'm not clear if it's some other kind of location-based targeting or some demographic or some other kind of targeting. Now, what was interesting is that 80% increase made the rate, this really good rate that they're holding up, is 0.57%.
Right,
so less
yeah.
than 1% of people clicked on the geo-conquesting ad.
Yeah, it says something about our interest in mobile ads or any kind of ads that pop up in front of us. It's such a small click-through rate that people are just still, they still find this an obtrusive way of getting information to you, which is why I think it goes back to the user experience. If you can deliver something to the consumer that isn't quite as obtrusive, and delivering a service, I that's what I took away from that report, was that there's still this hesitancy to click on anything, and it's really got to be relevant to the consumer.
Right, and while 80% increase is awesome, 80% increase in a very, very small number.
Very small number.
Just a very small number, right?
Exactly.
So this one, I want to sort of think this one through. So the way this works, I guess, is you're driving into the Applebee's parking lot with your family for dinner, and either you get an alert because you're signed on to the Outback program, or you open the weather maybe and you're sharing your location. So it says, oh, you're in the Applebee's parking lot. Quick, let's get them the Outback ad. And the Outback ad comes with you, you know, with an offer, maybe a 2-for-1 deal, a map of where the closest Outback is, and driving directions to it. Now, there's still a huge amount of friction to get you from the parking lot at Applebee's with your hungry children in the back seat to go to another restaurant.
Yeah, I thought about this too, and I have to go back to who is actually giving this data to Outback, and how is the original psychographic information being collected? And the only way I can decipher, and this is just an assumption on my part, is that a lot of the information about that particular consumer, his psychographics, his demographic composition, had to be collected somewhere else other than by Outback. And so if you track it back, where are they getting this information? Even if it's somewhat anonymized, it has to be through some other method, whether this person is a subscriber to Foursquare or Facebook or some sort of Google app. Where are they getting that targeted information to send that person an ad as they drive into a competitor's restaurant? And so I'm going to make this, you know, assumption that all of these companies, like Foursquare, are selling their POI database, selling their check-in database to other, and it's probably ad companies, it's not probably to Outback directly.
Right, and there's a whole other slew of places when you opt in. So there's that general demographics, but then there's, say, so my example was, you know, CVS and Walgreens. Well, CVS knows everything about me because I use my card every time I go in there. They know which stores I go to. They know exactly what I buy.
But CVS would have to sell that POI data and your consumer loyalty information to somebody else.
No, they'd use it themselves.
Right, but I'm saying, yeah, that's right. So if you're driving into a Walgreens,
they would say, oh, hey, and Adina is going into Walgreens, and we know she buys Gatorade here at CVS, so right. Let's tell her we'll give her 2-for-1 on Gatorade today.
Right, that's right.
I think that's another thing that this is highlighting, is that there are really two ways for these organizations to get the data. One is to agglomerate it from other sources that they buy it from, and the other is to get it directly from you.
Yeah, absolutely. But if Outback didn't have a loyalty program, and I don't know if they do or not, but if they didn't, how are they going to get the information? I guess that's what I'm suggesting.
Right, so that's part of the challenge of doing any of this. And as has been suggested to us in various and sundry places, just doing geo-targeting is not enough. You've got to have some demographic information behind it. Third study I want to talk about is from North American local search media and advertising company called YP. And they put out a report called Engaging Connected Consumers, Strategies for Local Business, Brands, and Retailers. And it's based on a survey of 1,000 smartphone owners aged 21 to 64. And here's what they found. 9 out of 10 almost always have their mobile devices with them, and 61% permit mobile apps to access their current location at least some of the time. So I'm totally cool with the 9 out of 10 people almost always have their mobile devices with them. I'm the 1% that doesn't, just to give you an example of somebody who doesn't. 61% of them allow their current location to be shared at least some of the time. Now, did that number strike 61% strike you as high or low?
Low to me.
Really?
I thought there'd be more people. Because you get so many of these things that come up all of a sudden that go, hey, can you give me your shared location? And frankly, I click it because I want the information, and I think a lot of the information I want is location-based. I just thought it was low. I thought people just go right by that and say they click location.
That's interesting because every time it pops up, not so much on my mobile device, but I on my laptop when I'm at home typically, it says, do you want to share your location? And my default answer is no.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I do it so much when I'm at home, but when I'm out and I want to share my location, it's just because I have a reason, right? I want people to give me something that's local.
You're convinced there is value to giving away that data.
I am.
You are one of the 61%.
Yeah.
One of the other things they found is that 1 in 3 respondents was willing to share their social media profile with a local restaurant. This compares to only 1 in 4 willing to share that same information with their bank or credit card company.
Mm.
What does that say?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting stat. And I almost never share my social profile. And I thought it was interesting because I would never share my information with a bank for sure. I might share it with a retailer, but I can see the comfort level with the financial institution.
They use the term local restaurant, and I'm not sure if that necessarily means local chain restaurant. My suspicion is it's that, because mom and pop restaurants don't usually have the infrastructure to do that kind of thing directly. But I think you'd more like be more likely to trust a mom-and-pop kind of one-off restaurant that's down the street than you would some national chain.
Well, isn't it interesting that the mom-and-pop stores are beginning to get into the technology and are thinking about using location-based services as a marketing tool? Because I think that it is going to get more affordable for them to do that. And if they're going to compete with the big national chains, they're going to have to get into it some way.
Right, and that's where the things like Foursquare and Yelp and sort of that idea of this local gem that you would never have heard of unless you took advantage of those services.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, so go mom and pop.
Yeah.
Now, the last study I want to talk about is actually by AOL and the University of Virginia School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. And they looked at ads and conversion events. That means people actually doing something as a result of the ad. And it analyzed data from more than 500 billion online ad impressions served by AOL network between 2012 and 2013, and 100 million conversion events across mobile phones, PCs, and tablets. So all of the mobile things, not just phones. And here's what they found. 3/4 of all mobile ad impressions were viewed within the home, and 1/4 of all digital time is spent at home on tablets or cell phones. That finding runs counter to the conventional image of the mobile user in on-the-go mode. Now, that floored me. So even though we're always carrying around our phones, 9 out of 10 people carrying them almost all the time, we just heard, this says that the actual ads that you see, however, you see 3/4 of them when you're sitting in your house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doesn't surprise me a bit.
Really?
No. Mobile phones are like pets to most people. It's personal. They carry them around all over where they go, in the home, all the time. They watch TV with them. They multitask, right? You're sitting there, you're watching a TV show, you have your tablet in your hand. So I think it is hard for people to decouple from the web, even if they're sitting, reading a newspaper, watching TV, whatever they're doing. It's a personal device. It's a pet. It's, you know, they got to have it close to them.
Okay, if that's the case, though, why then spend all this money marketing to people who you think are going to be out and about and use the location of them being out and about if they're not going to see that ad when they are, in fact, out and about? They're more likely to see an ad when they're sitting at home based on their home location.
Well, it's like every other type of advertising. The more you see it, the more you are you're impressionable by the ad that you see. So it's just like any other type of advertising, whether you see it on TV or a newspaper or a mobile device, you need to see it multiple times before it sinks in that's going to be your preference. So I didn't find that shocking at all.
I guess I found it shocking in the context of the stories we tell ourselves about how these mobile ads work. I mean, the stories we tell ourselves are you're out and about in the square or whatever, and you get an ad that says, hey, come on over here for lunch, you know, we've got a deal or whatever.
It's counterintuitive, but when you're in you may not always be in the moment. You may be searching for some future activity, restaurant, shopping center, whatever. And you may also be looking for a particular type of product for which your future event will be to visit a mall. So if you're sitting there searching but you're at home, it's just gathering information and that for some future purpose.
And you're gathering information for some future purpose. It's again, it comes back to that, how many impressions? You know, let's get our brand in your head whether or not you're acting on it right now or not.
Yeah, all of these studies that you presented and that we're delivering here in the show notes, I think are an indication of something much more far-reaching, in that we're seeing a real convergence of multiple location-based technologies with the advertising industry. In other words, near-field communication, out-of-home advertising, social network check-ins, location-based services, indoor positioning, all of these types of advertising mediums are now just converging. And we haven't quite figured out how to use all of them, but in terms of a merchandiser figuring out what's your marketing mix, how many of these either devices or methods of communicating should you use? We're really at that really early stage of trying to figure out what's going to reach the consumer in a most effective manner. So I just see this thing converging incredibly at an incredibly fast rate. And as some of these studies point out, some of these studies were only done 6 months ago. Right. So it's a really interesting situation we find ourselves in.
Right, and here's one final data point, because ultimately all of these activities that we've been talking about, the ultimate goal is to have you spend money, right? Mm. Buy something or go somewhere and spend money. Well, it turns out that a Nielsen study found that 95% of tablet shoppers and 72% of smartphone shoppers who make a purchase with their device do so at home.
Right.
They don't buy when they're out in the store or when they're at the coffee shop or whatever. That's another interesting data point, although I guess tied on to the one we just talked about, completely intuitive.
Well, and I think it also relates to the showrooming effect. You could be out shopping. You may not purchase that item immediately, but if you're out looking around and you happen to see something and you want to scan the UPC code or the QR code, you may get the information, oh, it's cheaper somewhere else, or I can buy it on Amazon cheaper, but you may not make that purchase then and there. You may wait till you get home, research on the device, make your purchase.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that this whole idea of waiting till you get home, and I know I, for one, like to do these things at home when it's calm and quiet, and I, you know, I can key in my credit card number with care, and there's nobody looking over my shoulder, and all that sort of stuff.
And I think that's the issue. I think that's exactly the issue.
It's where there's a comfort level.
It's a real comfort level, exactly.
Well, that's all the time we have for today.
And from us here at Directions Magazine, hope you'll attend the first .map conference, September 8th to the 10th in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where the map makers of the world in the mobile, print, and digital realm will gather. More information can be found at .mapconference.net.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can reach us at editors@directionsmag.com. You can send us a tweet at @directionsmag, or you can leave a comment where this podcast is posted at Directions Magazine. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.